broadcasting from Cincinnati.
You're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast on our 50th show. Of course, we talk about the latest boxing news here. If it's related to boxing, we talk about it. My name is Eric Lorta. I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about Triple G's next fight. He's got a fight lined up, and we'll tell you who it is. A big one today. Our fantasy lightweight champion will finally be crowned as we have our final between Pernell Whitaker and Roberto Duran. Our history lesson today goes deep. February 11th, 1990, James Buster Douglas versus Iron Mike Tyson for the undisputed championship of the world. We also have
fight.
I tell you what, that's one of those fights that if you saw it, you'll never forget it. It's one
that's
of those
right.
things. We also have a Super Bowl recap at the end of the show, but first we're going to get started with a major shocking development. Amir Khan, King Khan, has signed to fight Saul Canelo Alvarez on May 7th. I was shocked when I heard this news. This was pretty amazing to me. I mean, you know, we're talking about, Amir Khan fighting Danny Garcia, Kell Brook. When I heard he's going to fight for the middleweight title at 155 pounds, I was just like, wow, seriously? I could not believe that fight had been made. All that being said, I don't know that it's such a bad fight. I mean, it's like a win-win kind of fight. I mean, you know, Amir Khan carries the name. He carries a big name. Canelo, you know, I think it'll sell pay-per-views.
Well, and this also opens up the door, like I told Eric when he told me the news last week, you know, because this broke after last week's show. This also opens the door for Peter Nelson to work with Al Haymon, because Peter Nelson is the new CEO of HBO Sports. And like I've been telling people, I think one of the reasons why the previous person that was running HBO Sports got canned is because he refused to work with PBC and Al Haymon fighters. And, of course, Al Haymon had to sign off on this because Amir Khan has a contract with the PBC. And with Al Haymon signing off on this, I believe that this opens the door for HBO to get involved with all the PBC stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know what? I think this puts to bed that, you know, that whole notion that, you know, Pacquiao and Khan, and then, you know, Mayweather and Khan, that Khan talks too much and that he's, you know, this and that, and, the, you know, he talks too much, so we didn't sign him, and we didn't sign the fight because he's got a big mouth, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, this negotiation has gone on for a couple of weeks now, and
I believe Al had something to say about that. I believe Al finally contacted Amir and said, look, we're tired of you talking. Don't say a word. If you want a big fight, keep your mouth closed.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, I don't know how it happened. I don't know how, I mean, because like I said, man, with Golden Boy and everybody, I mean, these are two big-name fighters that absolutely had no place on the radar. I mean, nobody thought this fight was going to happen. I mean, this wasn't on anybody's radar.
Well,
you know?
I don't know why Canelo would take a fight like this, because, now, I'm not criticizing Khan because Khan's a good fighter, but if you're supposed to fight Triple G in the fall, why would you fight somebody from 147 and move them up to 155? How does this prepare you for Gennady Golovkin?
Well, we'll get to Triple G also and his opponent, because I'm not sure that really prepares him for anybody either.
Well, you know. I think Triple G is kind of left in the dark here, and he took somebody, you know, well, this was forced on him by the IBF. We'll get into that in a minute. But,
sticking to this fight, I mean, do you think, I mean, let me ask you this, though. Do you think Khan has a chance in this fight? I mean, this is a tough one, man.
I don't think he has a chance, and because he's a small guy. Yeah. 155 for Khan, I mean, if he could fight at 155, he'd already be fighting 154.
Yeah.
You know, I think Canelo is going to bully him around the ring. And frankly, I don't think it's going to last very long.
Do you think, let me ask you, like, okay, so, you know, because I think, and I think you'll probably agree with me, that Khan's best weight is at 140. I had this conversation with somebody when this fight was first announced that I thought Khan's best weight was at 140.
Right. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So in him moving up to 147, I don't think, again, man, he had trouble with Chris Algieri, and then, well, the counter was, well, Chris Algieri got better. Yeah, but, I mean, he's not an elite fighter.
No.
You know, I wouldn't classify him as an elite fighter.
No, so, and remember, the WBC has mandated that Danny Garcia's next fight is supposed to be with Amir Khan. Danny, I don't normally agree with fighters, but in this case, I totally agree with him. He said, look, I already demolished him at 140. What's the purpose of me doing it at 147?
Yeah, I'm not sure I see that. If Garcia and Khan, I was actually a fight I was looking forward to. I'm not sure I see that fight going down the same exact way, because I thought that Khan was doing pretty well, and Garcia kind of caught him. You know, Garcia caught
right.
him, whether he figured him out or not, whatever, but he caught him. But I thought
right.
Khan, for the first few rounds or whatever, was doing pretty well in that fight. He was winning.
Well, remember, it only went four rounds, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
He got clocked quick, you know.
Yeah.
You know, do you think Amir Khan is a better boxer than Canelo?
Yes, I do, because remember, Canelo is very slow-footed. He's very stationary. Look at the trouble Andazori Lori gave him.
Yeah.
I mean, Laura
gave him a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And matter of fact, I scored the fight for Laura, you know.
Yeah.
Because I thought Laura won. I picked Laura to win that fight, and I still think if they fought again, Laura would run around the ring and give him all kinds of issues. Khan's two advantages here is his movement and his boxing ability. He cannot be a stationary target. If he is, it's going to end quick.
And at some point, he's got to put some hurt on Canelo. I mean, he's got to at least get his attention.
But I don't know. I don't know if he's strong enough to do that, because let's face it, you're dealing with a guy that's out of his best weight class, and you're making him put on 8 more pounds. And look, Canelo may weigh in at 155, but he's going to go in the ring on fight night probably at 170. And I don't think Khan is going to be able to deal with that. I don't think Khan's going to be able to hurt him.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's my thing, is that, like I said, I mean, Khan comes in, you know, the weigh-in is going to be at 155. You know, the weigh-in for the fight is going to be 155. So, Khan, you know, like I said, I expect Khan to come in right around 153.
Yeah,
153 between 153 and 155.
And Canelo's going to come in at high 160s, low 170s.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, on the rehydration process, I expect Khan to be still right around 150, you know, right in there.
Yeah.
You know, right around the 155 area. I mean,
right.
But Canelo, again, is going to come up to 170. So you're looking at, like I said, man, that natural, yeah, man, it's going to be tough,
gonna,
man.
You're going to look at a 15 to 20-pound weight advantage. And watch, I guarantee you on fight night, Canelo won't even step on the scale, because he won't want to give HBO that information.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, man. I mean, like I said, you're looking at, like I said, man, probably on fight night, like a 15, 20-pound difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a tall order when you're talking about elite-level boxers, you know.
No.
And these two are elite level, man. It's
look, I think it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm looking forward to watching it. I will pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
But I don't see Amir King Khan actually winning this fight. The only way he's going to win is in his bank account.
Man, I tell you what, though. This is a win. I mean, this guy just hit the lottery. I mean, he really did. I mean, if you think about it, he really just hit the lottery. I mean, here's a chance to make history, becoming a middleweight champion, going from welterweight to a middleweight champion. He's got that shot, you know what I mean? And clearly he's not, I mean, I would be shocked if he won the fight and stayed it. I would be shocked if we only won the fight anyway, but I'd be shocked if he won the fight and stayed at middleweight. I don't see that happening. But,
yeah, Triple, this would be an easy fight for Golovkin. I mean, my God, can you imagine if Khan actually pulled that off? No, I don't see that.
But, I mean, think about it. It's a win-win for Amir, man. He goes up,
yeah,
and so he gets beat by, he's going to get paid a lot of money. I think, what I read like over $8 million for this fight?
Yeah, and Canelo's probably going to make 15 or 20.
$8 million, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's not chump change. That's more than you were going to make with Cal Brook, that's for sure.
And I guarantee you this is going to be like a $70 pay-per-view.
Yeah, know? This is probably going to be a good one. I mean, yeah, hopefully it won't be that bad, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I hope Oscar and company will stack the undercard. That's all I got to say. You know.
I hope so, too, man.
We'll see how many more PBC fighters will appear on the undercard. That'll be interesting, too.
I hope there's some on there. Yeah, I mean, because this is Golden Boy working with Heyman, you know, and those two are like arch enemies, you know.
And remember, they're still in court.
Yeah. So
I think Peter Nelson is partly responsible for this, and he's the new executive at HBO, so... hats off to Pete.
Yeah. I mean, this is, going back to Khan here, you know, he goes up and loses, you know, he gets $8 million. So say he loses to Canelo. All right, no harm, no foul, because everybody expects him to lose, you know.
Guess what? If he loses, as long as he don't get seriously hurt, in the fall you can make the big fight over in
right.
England with Cal Brook.
That's just what I was about to say. I mean, then you got a big money fight with Cal Brook. You got an IBF mandatory with, well, I don't know if that mandatory will still be there with Danny Garcia afterwards.
You know, at WBC.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, right, the WBC, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, what do you, where does Eddie Hearn and Cal Brook go from here? This is another fight that falls through for Eddie Hearn.
Actually, Cal Brook has a mandatory that he's got to deal with, and that's
right.
Kevin Bisier. And then he can wait for Khan to lose.
He was really irritated. From what I understand, they were all really irritated. Eddie Hearn was shocked. Cal Brook was really irritated. And there was some talk about Cal Brook wanting to move up to middleweight to fight Triple G. I said, that's a bad idea.
Well, Cal Brook is – Special K is a good fighter, but he's got no chance.
No.
I think it's going to be worth watching. I think it'll be entertaining, but Canelo will win this fight.
I think so too. It'll be good, man. And this is I was, you know, once I got over the initial shock, like, are you serious? This fight's really going to happen? Are you what? You know, and you start thinking about it, you're like, all right, you know, I could see that. It's not a bad fight. It's a very intriguing fight, put it that way. You know, because of Khan's boxing ability, his speed, and everything like that. You know.
Yeah. No. If anything's going to give Canelo problems, is his speed, his hand speed, his foot speed, and his movement around the ring.
Right.
Matter of fact, if I'm Amir Khan and Virgil Hunter, I copy the Andazwari Laura tapes. I follow them to the letter, and I put his game plan into effect.
I watched that tape over. I watched that tape, and I watched that Cotto fight over and over again, because Cotto was actually able to give him a lot of problems with the movement and everything like that.
If Amir Khan seriously wants to win this fight, you do what Cotto did. You do what Laura did.
He has trouble against movers. He has trouble against movers, man. No question.
And one thing Triple G is under, he's not known for, is his movement. He proved to me in the William Monroe fight that he could actually handle a boxer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see, I tell you what, I'd like to see Triple G fight Lara next. And since we're talking about Triple G, let's move on to the next topic, which is Triple G returning. Triple G will return to fight Dominic Wade on April 23rd.
Now
Wade, is not a bad boxer. Wade is not a bad boxer. He's 18-0. He beat Sean Porter in the amateurs.
Okay.
But I don't know that he's ready for Triple G just yet, man, to be honest. He doesn't have that resume yet, you know. I don't know.
And of course all the other boxing shows and all the boxing, you know, people that do like we do, they're all going to come out and criticize this to high heaven. Who's this guy? Why is he getting the fight? Well, this is mandated by the IBF. I mean, they made Dominic Wade a mandatory.
Well, not only that, but who I'm trying to think of who it was that pulled out. Who was fighting him and pulled out? Somebody.
Remember the negotiation was with Billy Joe Saunders. I mean, Saunders said no.
$4 million. Then, yeah, he offered him $4 million. And he said no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I'd take a $4 million check to get knocked out.
I would too.
I heard it was supposed to also Matt Korobov, but I don't
know if Korobov. That's what it was. Korobov.
I don't know if Korobov was officially offered the fight and he turned it down or.
I don't know what happened with that. I don't remember. And I thought I read something about it, but I can't remember if he pulled out with an injury or if he was injured or something. Something happened.
Okay.
And that's why Dominic Wade, and again, Triple G is of course high and dry, and that's why. Dominic Wade was inserted there, but he's the mandatory.
So
you can't really say that, you know, Triple G chose him. He kind of they chose him for him because he's the mandatory.
That's right.
There's nothing he can do about that.
And of course, since he wants to keep all the belts, he's going to fulfill mandatories. He's going to be the Vladimir. He's going to be the Vladimir Klitschko of the. He's going to do the Vladimir Klitschko of the middleweight. He's going to fulfill any mandatories anybody throws at him.
Right.
Unlike Canelo, who doesn't want to fulfill his mandatory.
Yeah, Triple G's been a mandatory for a couple of years now. You know.
Exactly. Canelo's doing the Cotto thing and not fulfilling his mandatory.
So Dominic Wade, do you give him a chance?
No.
Do you know anything about him? I mean, I don't know much about him, to be honest.
I also asked you because we had this was in the same car. I said, who the hell is Dominic Wade?
Right. I remember that now. I mean, there's nothing. I don't know what Wade brings to the table, really. I mean, they say is, you know, obviously his biggest win is against Sean Porter in the amateurs. He's 18-0. Right. Yeah. That's a long way away, man. I don't really know what he brings in, man.
Yeah. Just a note, it's going to get noisy here in a minute, so if it's too noisy, you can cut it off.
Yeah, that's fine.
Congratulations to Wade. You're going to get a good payday, but, you know, you're going to go to sleep.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't see, I don't know what he brings to the table, but... I've not heard of him, you've not heard of him, and this is kind of what we do. So if we haven't heard from him, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so on April 2nd, friend of the show, Francisco Santana returns. He's now being promoted by Top Rank. No opponent has been named yet, but he'll be returning on April 2nd, so it'll be good to see him back in the ring.
Okay.
Now, talk to me a little bit about, we touched on this last week a little bit. Now, and you brought in some. Let's touch on the PBC money troubles.
Okay. Now I'm going to have to refer to my source here. I'm a regular listener of the Next Round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. That occurs on Mondays for those boxing fans that don't know about that show. Last week, they had a financial expert on their program, and to specifically talk about the PBC money troubles. When Juan Allen Reed officially backed the PBC last year in 2015, they gave Al Haymon and crew $525 million to start this. That is how they're able to buy all the network time and promote fights and what have you. Well, after their first year of existence, because remember the PBC started last March, March 7th, they officially kicked it off on NBC. Well, from March 7th of 2015 until today, which is the day after the Super Bowl as we're recording this, will be up on Wednesday for you internet people, they have officially lost $270 million of that resource.
$270 million. Good God.
Like I said, for those of you that like to listen to podcasts, you can go back and listen to last week's show. Last week would have been February 1st edition of the Next Round, and they covered that in great detail. I'm a regular listener and participant of that show. Steve Kim, he's a well-known boxing writer. He's written for publications and websites for years. He writes for a couple now. Steve doesn't make things up. If he talks about it, he's either got a source or he's actually written an article about it. Because apparently he puts out articles on a daily basis. Him and Gabriel are both not fans of the PBC, so they openly admit that they're happy to publish anything negative when it comes to Al Heyman of the PBC. And believe me, I am not PBC brainwashed. I like what they're doing, but I can also see the other side of the issues. And believe me, we've pointed out several of their issues on this show about their matchmaking capabilities, and they come up with people that probably shouldn't be on our TV. So I can see where people are negative towards them.
So, and you were also talking about the PBC adding, PBC or other promoters with the success of Holly Holm and everything like that, and Ronda Rousey and the UFC adding women to undercards and shows and everything like that.
According to Lance Pugmire, and for those that want to look this up, this is in the February 8th edition of the Los Angeles Times. According to Lance Pugmire, who again has covered boxing for years and he writes for the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times don't hire just anybody, okay? You have to have a hell of a resume to be on their staff, and you have to know what you're talking about. He covers boxing and UFC and MMA stuff for the LA Times. In an article today, he said that Al Heyman and the PBC, Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy, and other promoters are considering putting more women boxing on their shows because of the success of Holly Holm. So I don't particularly like women boxing. It's not something I'm interested in. And remember, apparently, if we're going to see this, women's rounds, I didn't know this, Eric, because I don't pay attention, but women's boxing rounds are 2 minutes instead of three.
Right.
So, apparently, starting in the near future, we're going to start seeing more women on our TV. And that's because the PBC and other promoters want to get females in front of the TV to see if they'll support their own actually in the ring.
Do you think this is a good idea? I mean, because because here's what I think when I hear that. The UFC kind of did it correctly. They had Ronda Rousey come in, and she was kind of like their baseline. They had the 135-pound division. They put her and another girl to fight for that title. She won. And then they kind of went from there. But Ronda was always like that baseline.
Remember, Dana White did not want any women fighting, period. But Ronda Rousey kind of forced his hand. And, of course, she went undefeated. She was like, 10-11-0 before she finally lost to Holly Holm. So Dana White was kind of forced into bringing women into his sport when he didn't want them.
The biggest draw in the UFC.
Yeah.
I mean, by far.
Yeah. So boxing is trying to ride their coattails by, okay, well, we better do this.
My thing is, I know what they're doing, and I know what they're trying to do. My thing is, I'll give you an example. Like, what was it, the fight a couple of months ago? Remember when we had a pay-per-view fight? I don't even remember which one it was. Women on the undercard. I think it was a Top Rank card, if I'm not mistaken.
The last pay-per-view that I remember is the Cotto Canelo, but I bought that fight and I didn't remember seeing any women on there.
I think it was before that. It was definitely before that. But I remember like there was women on the undercard, and the thing is that nobody knows who's out there. There's not like a bona fide star. The thing is that Ronda was a star before she got to the UFC. Everybody knew who she was in that world.
Right.
In the MMA world, everybody knew who Ronda was, and
right,
she was a big star. And there was a couple of other big names. Boxing doesn't really have that.
The biggest
puts time into promoting that.
The biggest woman that I can remember even fighting is Layla Ali.
Right. That was it. I mean, Layla Ali, and then you had Christy Martin or whatever.
Yeah.
She was in there. That was a long time ago. And Layla Ali was a long time ago also.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, I mean, you know, I think they have to be brought in, but you have to promote it correctly. You can't stick two girls on there and have them fight and then say, okay, well, we're involved in women's boxing now because it doesn't work that way.
Probably the biggest name fighting out there today as far as females are concerned, and I don't even know that much about her, to be honest with you, is Heather Hardy.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of her, but I've never really, I haven't seen too much of her, you know.
No.
And there's there's other women out there that, apparently there's one that's really good, that's unified all the titles and everything like that. She's really good.
Yeah.
But my big fear with this is that you're not, you know, I don't think they're going to know what to do with them. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to know how to promote them correctly and how to, that's why the UFC has been successful at this. Because they knew what to do. They knew how to promote them correctly. And
I think because there's a bunch of men in charge, Eric, they're going to view women as sex objects and use their sex appeal to try to get them, to try to get an audience to come to the TV. And, if you're going to promote a person fighting, you don't want to use their looks as a way to get people to the TV. You have to actually put them in situations where they can show what kind of fighters they actually are.
Yeah, and then you have to have somebody with like a star power, I guess, in a lot of ways, you know. Because look at the difference. I mean, look at Holly Holm. Everybody knows who she is because of who she beat. You
exactly.
know, she's not, I don't see her on a lot of commercials or talk shows. I know she made the rounds when she won the title, but now I don't see her on a lot of talk shows or doing the rounds. I mean, Ronda Rousey's in movies. She's all over the place because she's that kind of, you know, polarizing figure. And it, you know, it's hard to get that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's going to be tough. And I think, honestly, like you said, I mean, I think it'll turn a lot of fans off, to be honest with you. It may turn a lot of boxing fans off.
Well, no, you and I are hardcore boxing fans, and we're not going to sit down and watch this.
It's hard for me to watch women's boxing, and I'll be honest, man. The only boxer that I could sit down and really watch was Layla Ali, and that's because she boxed like I'm accustomed to seeing people box. But now it'll be real interesting to see how that goes, because remember when it first came out and when Christy Martin was like the big draw. You remember that for women's boxing?
Right.
When I would watch, they were just throwing, just wailing punches. And it was just like, you know, they were swinging for the fences, and they didn't really have proper technique and everything like that. Now, you know, all of these girls out there, I mean, at least the ones, you know, in the UFC and everything like that, they all seem to have really good technique. And even like some of the boxers and stuff like that, they all seem to have really good technique now. It's not like it was back in the day.
Right.
You know? So it may get interesting. I mean, we may find a diamond in the rough. Hopefully, like I said, man, hopefully it gets promoted correctly. And, you know, because otherwise I see a lot of potentially, you know, the women champions in boxing making a way to MMA because they're promoted correctly there.
And another reason why Khan was added to a pay-per-view is because, let's face it, if these rumors are true about the finances, this is a way for PBC to actually make some money.
Right, where they're not promoting the right? They're not promoting the whatchamacallit.
Yeah.
That's their pay-per-view.
Because remember, one of Al's biggest things is he wanted to get rid of the pay-per-view model. Well, actually, he might be forced now to actually put some fights on pay-per-view if these financial rumors are true.
Yeah, that's scary, man. $270 million they've lost. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's an amazing number, man. My goodness.
Yeah. Because remember, the only fighter that Al Heyman ever really advised or managed, whatever you want to call it, was Floyd Mayweather. And, of course, Floyd didn't give him any money, I'm sure.
In all fairness, though, you know what? In all fairness, though, in just about every business, there's like a 4 or 5 year return. You know, where you have to go, you know, you're not going to make any money within that 4 or 5 years. You're in all likelihood going to lose money within that 4 and 5 years.
Well, and remember when
you start to turn some kind of a profit.
And remember when this first came out, they said it was going to be a 4-year plan. But I think all the stories that are coming out about them losing, everybody expected the PBC to lose money you know, the first few years, I think they're just shocked at the amount of money that they've actually lost. If they've lost this amount of money in the first year, what are the next 3 years, including 2016 and beyond, going to look like?
I don't, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, I don't understand the model. I don't understand the business aspect of what they're doing.
Because no, I don't
what
either.
I understood, from what I understood, they actually had to buy time. They actually had to go to Channel 5, or not Channel, but like NBC or CBS or whatever, and buy and say, hey, here's a, you know, X amount of million. I want this time slot from 5 to 6, you know, 5 to 6 or whatever.
Well, on all of the networks that Heyman has deals with, he's actually had to buy his own time. There is no actual official contract with the network other than Showtime.
Well, do you think this year he goes out and tries to recruit that? Because, I mean, he's gotten some pretty good numbers.
Yeah. Well,
they've gotten some decent numbers.
That's what Lance Pugmire said in the article that first revealed this. He said, look, Al, he's actually going to have to go out and actually recruit networks to actually pay him to put things on, and he's actually going to have to prove that he can get advertisers, you know. So, yeah, no, Lance is on top of this story as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't see, like I said, I mean, he's getting a lot of, and he's probably getting the right demographic, too. I mean, you're looking at that 18 to 35 demographic, that's who watches sports.
Yeah, 18, it's actually 18, the advertisers want, the two demographics they're looking for is 18 to 49 and 25 to 54.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I always go back, you know, when you talked about this, I think I brought this up too, is that I brought up that UFC model where they were literally weeks away from bankrupt, just folding up the shop. You know what I mean? And next thing you know, it's a billion-dollar company.
Absolutely.
You know, so I got a feeling, man, I think they'll be okay. It's just, you know, when you start, you know, adding things to the mix when you're not 100% set, you know, like UFC added women to the mix when they were already a billion-dollar, they were making money and everything like that, you know, and they were already established. You know, PBC is not yet established, so I don't know.
Well, and keep a couple of things in mind. We still have two major lawsuits going through the court system, and apparently starting in March, we're going to see at least in one of these cases discovery being put out. So the people are actually going to have to start testifying in court on some of these things. So our show could get very interesting, and we're going to have to start boning up on our education.
We're going to have to bring a lawyer in here, you know?
Yeah, exactly. a lawyer and a financial person.
That's right.
Because it looks like we're going to have to start covering these things.
Exactly. All right, let's move ahead here. Andre Ward fighting in a few weeks here in March. Scheduled to fight Sullivan Barrera. The deal is not done yet. And this is a shocker, man, because I tell you what, they have been trying to finalize this deal for 8 weeks now. Ward and Rock Nation has yet to sign the contract. Kathy Duva has come out and said, who promotes Sullivan Barrera, come out and said, Hearns Hagler, Holyfield Foreman, and Whitaker Chavez, all huge fights, didn't take this much time to make.
Nope.
What on earth is going on there, man? Why? What is the holdup? I'm hearing all kinds of things. I mean, like I said, about Andre Ward, about how he, like I said, I mean, he fought, who was it, Paul Smith? Was it Paul Smith?
Paul
Smith. You know, a pretty lightly regarded challenge, you know, for Ward anyway. You know, everybody, nobody really gave Smith a shot in that fight, which he didn't really have a shot, to be honest.
Right.
You know, he had a fight. He pulled. He was going to fight on the Canelo undercard. He pulled out the Cotto Canelo. He pulled out because of a knee soreness. And now he's going to fight again. He's supposed to fight in March, and then you know, he's not too anxious to sign against Sullivan Barrera, man. What?
No, and remember, he doesn't sell tickets in his own hometown.
It's funny that you mentioned that. It's funny that you mentioned that because he was on the Kovalev card, not card, but on the Kovalev fight. Supposedly, like, there to promote, you know, kind of there to promote things, to promote his next fight, to promote the Kovalev fight.
And frankly, he didn't do that.
No, he really didn't. And rumor has it, he left the fight early. He left the Kovalev fight before he was even over.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't even stay for the full thing. Because, I mean, look, man, You know, let me tell you what, man. Everybody has an opinion on Floyd Mayweather. Whether you like him or you hate him, whatever, everybody's right. got an opinion on this guy.
Right.
All right? The thing about it is, again, whether you like him or hate him, he promotes the fight. You
yeah.
pay to see him get beat up. You pay to see him win. Whatever. He just gets you interested, you know?
Well, Floyd knows how to talk. Andre does not.
But that's the thing, though. That's what, I mean, you know, that's what it's about. I mean, you know, he's, you know, everybody rips on Floyd. Floyd is the hardest working guy in boxing. You know, he really is. Even now, he's got no fights lined up. May 7th is taken. He's not fighting there. You know, for all intents and purposes, if you take him at his word, he's retired. You know, look.
Well, I still say with
him, the news every single day.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I still say with the amount of money that he's going through, he's going to fight again. I mean,
maybe no, but the point is that he knows how to promote those fights. He gets the big paydays. He gets the big paydays because he promotes the fight. You can't, if you have a promoter, that's great, but you can't just rely on your promoter to promote the fights. You have to take a healthy interest and do this also.
Well, I want to see Floyd actually do that with the guys that he's supposedly promoting. You know, why isn't he doing that for a world champion?
Bobby Jack, yeah, Bobby Jack, man, yeah. I mean, Floyd's the one that got, according to Badu Jack, man, Floyd's the one that got him that title fight with Durrell. So,
yeah,
he won, yeah.
Well, okay, well, then show Jack the Ripper how much you love him and start promoting him.
And not only that, he's got Ashley Theophane, the biggest fight of his career with Adrian Bronner coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a huge fight for Theophane, you know.
Probably putting Cincinnati in the arena will be empty.
No,
you know?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. So those two are fighting, and the rumor has that fight's going to land in Atlanta.
Okay. In an empty Georgia Dome or what?
There ain't no way that fight's landing in the Georgia Dome. I got news for you.
I'm joking. You know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, there's no way that fight's going to the Georgia Dome, son.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they can hold that fight in a phone booth.
Yeah, really. At a high school yeah. gym, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, with Bronner, too. I mean, Bronner, you know, he talks and talks, but when it's time to talk, you know, and time to sell yourself and promote the fight, he's nowhere to be found.
Well,
like
you told me in October when he had the last fight in Cincinnati, he didn't do anything to promote it locally. He didn't talk to anybody. His constant thing, the only people I'm talking to is Showtime. Well, yeah. how does that help you sell a fight?
Right.
I mean,
the press conference for that fight was like the last day. I think it was the last game of the red season or something like that. It was something along those lines. And I went downtown for this, man. And I went downtown to go to this press conference. And I'm like, man, I couldn't find a spot near the arena because it was being held at U.S. Bank Arena, which is our arena over here, which is coincidentally, or not coincidentally, but right next to the Red Stadium. And there was not a spot to be found. And I saw the Showtime trucks and everything like that there. I think it was the Showtime trucks there. And I'm like, wow. I said, this fight is going to be huge. Of course, me not thinking that there's multiple sports here, you know.
Yeah.
I go into the U.S. Bank. Right where they're doing the press conference. I'm expecting to be down on the floor. It's in a small little hallway when you walk in.
Right.
You know, and I look around, man, I'm like, this place is just empty. They have all the seats in front, not for press or fans or anything like that. It was all for people's entourage. I mean,
oh my God.
There was nobody at this nobody at this conference, man.
And that's the way Andre Ward is covered here local in his own hometown. It's because he don't talk to nobody.
He doesn't give interviews either. I heard it's very hard to talk to him.
Hell, he gave a ridiculous interview a few weeks ago on the fight game to Michelle Beadle. And, of course, Michelle Beadle don't know a damn thing about boxing.
Right.
So they were all softball questions. I mean,
what's your favorite color you like?
I mean, that's another thing that drives me crazy.
Michelle Beadle.
You have a boxing show, and you put a woman on a boxing show for what purpose? She doesn't know a damn thing about boxing.
You know
what's
who they
the
should
purpose?
Get on that show? You know who they should get Layla Ali on the show?
Well, yeah.
Lally is pretty good.
Or Jessica Mendoza or some of the other women that actually cover the sport. I mean, my God.
Yeah, I mean, somebody, something. I mean, somebody, give me some substance there.
But, yeah.
You know, Michelle Beadle knows nothing.
She knows nothing.
About the sport, like, man.
Give me a break.
Yeah, so she's over there asking him what his favorite color, what kind of car he drives.
Remember that ridiculous interview that she also did with Oscar De La Hoya? All she could talk about is his fantastic office.
Unbelievable.
Give me a break, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why they continue to have her on that show. I don't know. I don't even watch the show. I'll be honest, man. I don't want to watch the fight game because they don't report anything. Number one, they don't report anything I don't already know. You know, what do they cover that we don't already know or that we haven't already covered? Nothing.
I mean, hell, you got everything covered. You look on the internet every day,
it's on our site. It's all over, man. I mean, and it's not just me. It's all those sites out there.
Yeah.
All the sites, all the podcasts, and everybody who does this, you know, day in and day out and does the shows every week and everything like that. I mean, you know, and if the fight game was interesting, we'd watch it. I don't watch it because it's not interesting. You know what I mean?
I mean, come on, Jim Lampley. You want somebody on there to talk boxing? Give me a call. I'm ready.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. Hey, Rock's out there, man. He got his name out, son.
That's right.
He's our celebrity right here.
That's right.
He's our Max Kellerman.
Yeah, well, I do a better job than Max. He asks stupid questions sometimes too.
I don't understand. Like, and I don't even mind that so much. I don't even mind Kellerman asking a question. My problem with Kellerman is that when he's on HBO, he's a completely different. He's just a homer.
Because
I've heard him on ESPN, and we've heard him before. You know, he goes at it. And he usually, like I said, he'll tell it like it is. And when he's off camera, in the sense that he's not working for HBO. You'll get like an honest opinion out of him. When he's on HBO, forget it, man. He's just a
nice guy. That's why I miss Larry Merchant. Larry would tell it like it is, and you couldn't tell with Larry that he's getting paid by HBO, because if HBO did something wrong, Larry would tell you about it.
Well, that's why my guy was Freddie Pacheco, man. He would always just rip people, boy, and just tell the truth, you know, and just tell the truth. I remember there was a pay per view between Julio Cesar Chavez and Greg Haugen. Do you remember that paper? I don't know if you remember that pay-per-view or not.
Yeah, I do.
It took place in Mexico.
Yeah.
And they were talking about they sold this fight and sold this fight. Like, Haugen was this big time. Yeah, and everybody knew. If you knew anything about boxing, you knew it was a whitewash. Haugen was going to get demolished. So they're on the telecast. Right as it first, you know, they bought the pay-per-view first on, he said this should be a one-sided fight.
Yeah,
I mean it was as simple as that. It should be a one-sided fight for Chavez. I was like, finally, somebody tells the truth. Finally, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know, you got Don King was promoting it, and he was giving Greg Haugen all these props and everything like that. And Greg Haugen, blah blah blah. You know, and everybody who knew the fight knew it was going to go that way.
I remember Greg Haugen fighting Tony the Tiger Lopez and Bobby Chacon here locally in California. And I knew that Greg Haugen didn't have a chance, you know.
Greg Haugen, boy.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on, man. Some sad news, man. Last Wednesday, at the age of 76, Richie Giacchetti passed away. He was the former trainer of Larry Holmes, and later in Mike Tyson's career, Giacchetti took over and trained him for a little while. This was sad, man. This is sad. Again, man, Giacchetti was with Holmes from the get-go, man. He was Holmes' trainer from the get-go, man. So those two were...
Sad, but...
Yeah, but 76, man. So, sad to see. All right, so we're going to go to our train wreck of the week next. Yeah, this is a good one here. Antonio Tarver owes $779,000 in back child support. A magistrate is giving Antonio Magic Man Tarver until next Wednesday to hand over his 350 Mercedes SUV as partial payment for overdue child support. If he doesn't make the deadline, Tarver's going to face some time.
Tony, talk to Al. But, I mean, apparently he's giving money away, so there you go.
The five-time boxing champion who lives in Land O'Lakes has been running behind on his child support since 2008. He now owes about $779 after his most recent court order.
$779,000.
I keep messing that up, don't I?
Yeah.
Tarver's mother, Gwen Tarver, contacted the 8 on Your Side News, which is where I got the story from, to complain about the 2010 Mercedes was her son's gift to her years ago. She said she can't understand why the court is making him give it to his ex-girlfriend. Well, because he owes $779,000.
Yeah, and hey, that's a hell of a way for a woman to get a car.
Yeah, right. Well, if he was buying his mom a car, I mean, if he's buying anybody else's back child support, I don't know. Crazy.
Well, and this is a guy that failed two steroids tests, you know.
No wonder he's fighting, like, you know, now he's making, you know, he's fighting now and stuff like that. He ought to stick to commentating, man. I like him. He's a good commentator.
Yeah, well, pay your bills, son.
Wow.
So I mean,
we'll see how it goes, man.
I paid child support, and I never was late, so.
This next story, man, this is really disturbing, man. I saw the video on this. It's horrible. The IRA claims credit for a deadly weigh-in shooting in Ireland last week. Now, last Friday, there was a small fight going on in Ireland. We didn't report on it because it was, people you never heard of anyway.
That's right.
But there was a shooting at the weigh-in. One man was killed and two others injured. Apparently, three men wearing police uniforms crashed the Regency Hotel where the weigh-ins were taking place and started shooting. There was another member in the audience who was dressed in drag who started shooting as well. So there was actually four gunmen there. The IRA claims this is retribution for the killing of Alan Ryan, a former IRA member who was shot in 2012. What was described as a targeted attack by police. I saw the video for this. It was really, really disturbing. So the guy is getting ready to step on a scale. They were weighing the two boxers. The guy is getting ready to step on a scale. All of a sudden, you hear gunshots. And then you see, like, this pandemonium. Of course, everybody's getting out of there. The boxer, of course, just takes off, gets out of there, which I don't blame him. Everybody's running every which way. And at the end of it, you know, you see, of course, one guy was killed, two others injured. Just what in the world is going on, man? I just couldn't believe that. When I read that article and I saw the video, it was like, are you seriously?
That's horrible.
This, man. This is an awful, awful thing, man. So,
yep.
So hopefully everything gets back on track there, and hopefully everybody, the fighters are okay, and everything kind of settles down and goes back to normal, man. Just a horrible, horrible thing, man.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about our upcoming fights. Upcoming fights here, which we have one, and that's tomorrow, and you guys won't be able to hear about it because we won't be reporting on it because it's Monday. Show, of course, releases on Wednesday, but tomorrow, Jamel Herring of Olympic fame will face Luis Eduardo Flores. This is on PBC on Fox.
It'll be on Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, 10 rounds lightweights, and then Alex Martin versus Rosenberth Gomez, 8 rounds welterweights.
Okay.
Got to think that they fed Jamel Herring a stepping stone, and he's going to win that fight pretty easy.
Yeah. And that's it for this week. I mean, we don't have there is nothing else.
No, that's it. That is it. It's dry. So nothing we can do about that.
Right.
So let's move along to the history lesson.
Oh, yeah.
February 11th, 1990. And if you saw this fight, you remember it like it was yesterday.
You'll never forget it. I think it's the only time HBO ever went to Japan.
Yeah, Mike Tyson versus James Buster Douglas. Douglas is a 43-1 underdog in this fight. Did I mention Douglas is from Columbus, Ohio? The great state of Ohio, where we make champions. You heard of Ray Mancini, Aaron Pryor, James Douglas, all of them. Sean Porter, Adrian Broner. I could list goes for miles.
Yeah.
Charles goes for miles.
Yep.
Goes for miles, because that's what we do here in Ohio. All right. This fight, I tell you what, when the bell rang for this fight, you saw it, and Douglas used the jab really effectively, and I thought he won the first round, you know? And if you saw the first round, you saw the entire fight, because every round subsequently was like the first round. I mean, Tyson couldn't do anything. The one thing you really noticed when Tyson got rid of Kevin Rooney and when he went to Don King and he got new trainers and everything, is his head movement seemed to disappear.
Yep.
You know, he was more of a standstill target. Not that he was easy to hit, but he wasn't as difficult to hit as he was early in his career.
Well, the problem back then is everybody thought, okay, Tyson doesn't need to do all these extra things. He blows everybody out.
Right.
So what's the point of paying attention to actually moving your head, boxing, moving around the ring? You could just be a stationary target because you blow everybody away anyway. Well, he found out the hard way. You can't win fights like that.
No, you have to put everything together.
Yeah.
You know, and when you put everything together, that's when everything falls into place, and that's what makes it look easy, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so Douglas was just doing his best, man, just jabbing and moving, occasionally come in with a right hand. This was just an off night for Tyson. I don't know if it was just an off night or Buster Douglas was that great that night. I don't know. Because Buster had definitely shown flashes of this throughout his career. He wasn't a bad fighter. He was a really good fighter. But he just kind of put it all together for this fight. And I don't think he caught Tyson on a bad night. I think, you know, this fight takes place anywhere else. I think it's the same thing, you know.
Well, Buster Douglas was kryptonite to Mike Tyson.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, like I said, man, those jabs kept him at bay. And he really laid down the blueprint on how to beat Tyson. It's how Lewis beat him later on. Lennox Lewis, before he went out to fight Mike Tyson in their fight that we actually covered also on the history lesson, before he went out to fight Tyson, was watching that fight in the dressing room.
Right.
So how crazy is that? So he definitely laid out that blueprint. Now, in the eighth round, Tyson caught him with an uppercut, and Douglas went down. And this is where the lawsuit, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, at the end, came into play here because they tried to sue everybody after this fight. He got hit with an uppercut. Tyson hits Douglas with an uppercut. Douglas drops and then waits for the count, and he follows the referee's count, and then he gets up. And Tyson even goes over this in his act, that undisputed Broadway act. He
Absolutely.
Even goes over this in his act. And says in his act to this day that was a long count. I know Tyson, you know, when I was watching that, like I said, I've seen it live. I've seen the Undisputed live. And he is brutally honest with everything in his career and everything like that. And I believe him.
Right.
And I believe that maybe he does think it was a long count. I'm here to tell you that was not a long count.
No, I don't think so.
No. And you could say, you know, and he does the video where you see it where you look in you see, you know, is when you see Douglas go down, he counts 1, 2, 3, you know, and he does the count or whatever, and I think he reaches like 12 or whatever. The thing is, if you watch Douglas is not all that hurt. He was shaken up and it stunned him, you know. But could he have beat the count? Yeah, he could have beat the count. So what does Douglas do? He takes, you know, he does what he should do. The referee, you know, he listens to the ref's count, you know.
Yeah.
So he gets up on the count of 8 and the fight continues. You
right.
know, the referee didn't blow it. I mean, nobody blew it. It's one of those things that Douglas was listening to the count. If the count was a couple seconds faster, Douglas would have been up.
Right.
It's that simple. And the round ended 30 seconds later anyway. I think in less than 30 seconds later, the round ended anyway. So it wasn't even a huge deal.
And I believe the fight ended like in the 11th round anyway.
10th round. Yeah, 10th round. 9th round. I'll tell you what, they could have stopped that fight in the 9th round because Tyson got hammered in that next round.
Right.
It was that right hand. I see this shot. You know, every time I think of the fight, I just see this shot. Tyson's against the ropes. It's the 9th round, and Douglas hits him with a gigantic right hand and just drives him back on the ropes, man. It looked like he was going to knock him out of the ring. It hit him so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 10th round, early in the 10th round, Douglas threw one of the best four-punch combinations you'll ever see. Left uppercut followed by a gigantic right hand. The jab, of course, set everything up. Tyson goes down. Mouthpiece comes out. I mean, he hit hard. He hit hard, man. He was out. And just reflex got him back up. I mean, he's trying to put his mouthpiece in as he gets up. And referee counts him out. Game over, man. Buster Douglas becomes the brand new heavyweight champion of the world.
And, of course, he lost it several months later to Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, so let's talk about the aftermath of the fight, man. Do you remember what happened in the aftermath? Don King says, no, it was a long count. He continues to play that long count tape.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and everybody's just like, seriously? You know, I mean, your guy lost. He lost literally every round with the exception of that 8th round.
Right.
Which you can give Tyson a 10-8 round for it. You can even make an argument that it was a 9-9 round, you know, or you could make the argument that Douglas was winning the round up until that point. You can make the argument Douglas actually won the round because it happened so late and it was the only thing he did, you know. I couldn't give Tyson one round in that fight.
Nope.
I mean, I don't know, and I think the judges actually gave the – judges had Douglas ahead, of course. But I think they were a little bit closer than what I expected. I couldn't get
around. Yeah, no, Mike just wasn't Mike that night. You could tell that something was off, and to this day, I don't know what it was.
But Mike wasn't Mike for a long time leading into that fight. I mean, he was being fed a steady appetite of just fighters that really weren't Douglas. I mean, Douglas was a boxer.
Yeah, and Douglas was supposed to be a pushover for him, but as you found out, he wasn't. So
well, you know how that goes, man. I'll tell you what. Yeah, exactly. 43-1 underdog, man. It was unbelievable. And so after the fight, you know, Tyson, of course, has his problems or whatever. Buster Douglas, of course, then goes on to fight Evander Holyfield and just gets completely starched in that fight after three rounds. As good as he looked against Mike Tyson was as bad as he was. He was just as bad against Evander Holyfield.
And, of course, we covered that fight also in our past history lesson.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he could do nothing against Buster. He couldn't. I don't think he wanted to fight. I think Buster, that was it for him. After that fight, that was it for him, you know.
I think he partied too much and actually didn't get in good shape and take Holyfield seriously.
He came in really bad shape for that fight. He came in, he was way overweight for that fight. I don't know what I don't remember exactly how many pounds heavier he was.
But in this fight too,
his mother had just passed away a week or so beforehand. James Douglas, I'm speaking of, his mother passed away, and so if he needed any extra motivation for fighting for the heavyweight championship, you know, he got it there also. So, you know, and you got to give him props for that too. I mean, you got to really commend the guy for that because, hey, look, man, I mean, you know, your mother passes away. That's not an easy thing to deal with.
No, it's
you
not.
You know, and then have
and
to go in there and fight
you're in
this
a
killer.
Foreign country, and you're in a foreign country to boot.
Right, and then you got to go in there to fight this killer. You know, it's like, geez, you know, what do you, you know, that's a hard thing. So for him to put that away, continue on with training, and somehow use that as motivation, you know, and to help him throughout the fight, and to, you know, because really you have to kind of house that. You can't really even, you know, you really have to, you know, stall your grieving process at that point because you're in training.
I mean,
you know.
Hell, if this fight was in the States, it would have been canceled and rescheduled for later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, man. It was a lot of money, you know, because it was overseas and everything like that. That was a big deal. One thing, you know, and the other thing too, and this is for Tokyo in general. If you watch MMA, if you're ever a fan of like the Pride Fighting Championships that always took place in Tokyo or any event in Tokyo you watch, the one thing that you'll notice that the announcers were really, you know, that you were really not familiar with was, you know, when Tyson was getting beat, the announcers had made reference to just the fans not even into the fight. I think the fans were absolutely into the fight. It's a different vibe over there. You know, they let the fighters hear the instructions in the corner. That's just something we're not used to. We're used to these raucous crowds and everything like that. But in Tokyo, you know,
it's all quiet over there. That's how they do things.
Right. That's how they watch the fight. You know, and Quentin Jackson, who was a MMA fighter for the UFC, I remember him, he gave an interview and they asked him, why do you think it's so quiet there? And he gave the best answer, and I think it's probably accurate. He says he thinks they're quiet there because, number one, they respect the fighters. And they also, when they want the fighters to be able to hear instructions from the corner. You know, so when the corner shout out instructions, they hear it. And that's just something that you weren't used to. You know, or that the American public, when they watched this fight, weren't used to. I know I wasn't used to it at that point.
No.
But it was really something to see because this happens all the time. I mean, even when you watch the, like I said, the MMA and stuff like that over there, they're completely quiet. And it's not that they're a very educated audience, you know.
Yeah, if you watch fights in other countries, like in the UK, it's the same as it is over here. But when you go over there, it's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty amazing to see. But overall, just an amazing night, man. Just an amazing night for boxing for Douglas and kind of started the demise of Mike Tyson. I mean, he still had a successful career. I mean, he came out of jail. He was, you know, in jail for 3 years, came out, won the heavyweight championship again and again. You know, he won it twice. Then, you know, so, you know, pretty neat stuff, that's for sure. Something you won't forget.
Yeah, one of those fights, if you've seen it, you never forgot it.
Yeah, and you'll always remember it because you're watching it round by round saying, am I really watching this, you know?
Yeah. And like, remember, we had to stay up late for that because it started, I forget what time it started, but it was a strange time.
I think it was like 11 or something like that, wasn't it? It was like 11 Eastern or something like that. It was, they tried to do their best to accommodate it, but yeah, it was a little bit later.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, pretty interesting. And then weeks before that fight, if you remember in sparring, that was when Tyson got knocked down by Greg Page in sparring.
That's right.
That was the big news going into the fight. Not that, not Buster Douglas, not anything about him, but the fact that Tyson got knocked down in training in that fight by Greg Page, and it was a perfectly timed shot too.
Right.
Big shot. So yeah. All right. Let's move on here. The big one. This is what you all been waiting for: the fantasy lightweight tournament final. This is it, man. Roberto Duran, the number one seed, versus Pernell Whitaker, the number two seed. All right, so let's talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about how each fighter got here on the tournament, okay? So in Duran, the first first fight he had was against Dooku Kim. We all agreed he was probably going to knock out Dooku Kim. Roberto Duran advanced. Then he fought Bo Jack, fighter back in the early 1900s. Again, another knockout. We all agreed he's probably going to knock out Bo Jack on that one.
That's right.
Roger Mayweather, again, suffered the same fate. I think he would have knocked out Mayweather in about 7 or 8 rounds.
That's right.
Alexis Arguello, based on his fight against Aaron Pryor, again, we figured it would be a knockout before the final bell.
That's right.
So straight knockouts across the board for Roberto Duran to get
That's
here.
That's right.
And he lands himself in the finals here. Let's talk about Pernell Whitaker now. Pernell Whitaker, of course, takes the opposite route. I believe he wins decisions all across the board here.
I believe so.
Pernell Whitaker, in his first round, he fought Ray Mancini. Then he advanced, beat Mancini, advanced to fight Henry Armstrong. Again, beats Henry Armstrong. Then he advances to fight Hector Camacho. Of course, decisions him. And then this last one, man, this was a tough one with him and Shane Mosley, but ultimately we gave Pernell Whitaker the nod on that, and he gets to the finals. He's had a tough road to get here, man. Ray Mancini, Henry Armstrong, Hector Camacho, and Shane Mosley.
Yep.
That's a murderer's row right there, man.
That's right.
That's some pretty good fighters right there, man.
And he had to decision all of them, man.
He didn't go home early on any of those nights, man. That's
no.
for sure.
No.
He earned his money. So, all right, so let's talk about their intangibles, man. Let's talk about the chin. I've got to give this to Duran.
Yep.
You know, Tommy Hearns was the only one to knock Duran out, as far as I know, to knock him out cold.
That's right.
And Tommy Hearns was a special kind of fighter, man. He had special kind of power.
That's right.
Pernell Whitaker, of course, was knocked down by Roger Mayweather. He's been knocked down quite a few times in his career.
So that's correct.
I think the chin you have to give to Duran.
Right.
Especially at 135.
Right.
Speed. This is a tough one, too, because it's not like Duran is slow.
No. Both of them are fast, but, man, don't you have to give the edge to Sweet Pea here?
I think so. I really do, man. Sweet Pea was quick. He was lightning quick, man. Boxing ability. This is another tough one. I think for this one, I have to give the edge to Whitaker. It's real close.
Yeah.
But I have to give the edge to Whitaker. I mean, you're talking about an Olympic gold medalist, you know, multiple weight world champion. Even though we're only talking about 135 pounds, you know, you don't see everybody in the world win a gold medal for nothing. You know, you've seen every kind of style there is, and I think that boxing ability has to go to Whitaker.
That's right.
Power.
Without a doubt, that goes to Duran. Yeah.
This is that wasn't even close, man. That had to go to Duran. So overall, here we got to figure out who has the advantage here, and I'm going to kind of defer it to you. Who has the advantage in this fight?
You know, because of the movement and the, I have to give a slight edge here to Sweet Pea.
Wow. Very surprising. Very surprising.
Yeah. Although with Duran's power, you know, that fight could end at any time, but correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Sugar Ray Leonard give Roberto Duran fits, especially in their first fight, because of his movement, you know?
He did. I mean, it was a close fight. It was a very close fight.
Yeah. But he's the only one I can think of that had the kind of skill set that Sweet Pea had that Duran fought. Am I wrong?
No. No, I don't believe so. Well, Benitez. But that was, again, later in weight. That was, again, later in weight. And he had lost. He had lost, and he wasn't, you know. So you take a look at, that first Sugar Ray fight, and that's what I look at.
But that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Right, but you remember me. He beat Sugar Ray.
Yeah, absolutely.
And would you favor Sugar Ray at welterweight over Pernell Whitaker? I would.
I would, too, yes.
That's a tough.
Because Ray had knockout power. He didn't depend on his body, you know. He could box you, but if he needed to knock you out, he could put you away also.
Right.
And Pernell, see, that's the thing with Pernell. If you hit him, he would fall.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. So, tell me how the fight plays out, and then I'll ask you for your pick.
I think in the early rounds, Sweet Pea wins a few rounds with his movement and his speed, but in the later rounds, Duran picks up the pace and actually starts punishing Whitaker, and I think Duran wins this on a late round stoppage.
Wow, that's a shocker. I did not expect that.
Late round stoppage.
Wow. Robbie takes Duran in a late round stoppage. Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, here's my take on the fight.
Okay.
All right. Duran beat Sugar Ray at welterweight. All right.
Right.
Most people would probably take Sugar Ray at welterweight over Whitaker.
That's correct.
Okay, I think so, because Whitaker has to come up and weight. Again, we're talking about 135 here, which is Sweet Pea's best weight. And then, so he has to move up to 147. I would take Sugar Ray in that fight.
Now, did Sweet Pea ever fight anybody at 135 that had all the skills that Duran had?
No.
I don't think so.
No. But he did fight, you know. No, he never did. I don't think he ever did. Not with that power. Not with that kind of power.
No.
I think, we're talking about the Sugar Ray fight. Like I said, most people would take Sugar Ray at welterweight over Whitaker.
But right.
Duran beat Sugar Ray in their first fight at
That's
welterweight.
That's correct, he did.
He moved up and beat him.
That's
a lot
correct.
Of people say it was because Sugar Ray brawled. I'm not so sure of that. Because they say Sugar Ray fought Duran's fight. I'm not so sure of that. They point to the second fight where Ray boxed more and frustrated Duran. You know, and I'm kind of on the mindset. The fact is Duran was way out of shape in that second fight. Ray Leonard even admits in that second fight that he tried to make it as quick as possible. Apparently the two are doing a commercial. The two are doing something.
Yeah.
And he knew Duran gets out of shape after fights. So he wanted that fight to take place ASAP.
And
rumor has it that Duran had to lose close to 80 pounds to make weight for that second Sugar Ray fight.
Well, remember, I told you that there's all kinds of legendary stories that go around Las Vegas. Every time Duran had a fight, he would, people that worked in the buffets would talk about the amount of food this man would put away.
Right.
You know?
It's a heap of loose. Even I remember Ferdy Pacheco saying, man, I want that guy's diet, man, because he's able to lose weight at will, man. you see him and he's ballooned up to, he looked like over 200 pounds, and then you see him at fight time, he's all chiseled up and everything. So I'm like, wow, you know?
Yeah.
So honestly, I think you could throw the second fight out the window.
Yeah.
We're talking about this fight with Whitaker here.
Right.
Duran beat a lot of people by applying pressure. The question is, could Whitaker avoid his pressure for the full 15 rounds?
I don't think so. Because, see, that's the key with Sweet Pea. If you could withstand his movement and handle his movement throughout the fight, later in the fight, you could take advantage of of his weaknesses, because basically you could force Whitaker to move around and expend all of his energy, and then later on in the fight, this, okay, now he's tired, now I can take advantage.
Right. So, you know, could he avoid his power for the full 15? You know, could he avoid his pressure for the full 15? No.
I don't think so.
No, he can't avoid that pressure.
No.
I don't think Whitaker could avoid that power for the full 15 rounds.
No.
However, does this necessarily mean that Whitaker gets knocked out? No. I think Whitaker made a career out of beating pressure fighters. You look at Julio Cesar Chavez. You look at Azuma Nelson. Azuma Nelson, if you go back and you watch that fight with Azuma Nelson. Now, Azuma Nelson, admittedly, is not Roberto Duran.
But if, not close.
Right. But if you watch that fight over and over, you watch it. Azuma Nelson does not take a backward step in that fight. He goes
Azuma Nelson didn't know how, he didn't know how to take a back step to anybody. That's
right.
The way he fought.
And I mean that, and it wasn't the kind of pressure where he's just coming forward. He is literally at one point running toward Pernell Whitaker. I mean, so he is in his face 24/7, 15, 12 rounds of that fight. He is in Whitaker's face.
Yeah.
You take guys like that. You take guys like Julio Cesar Chavez. The guys like that. Whitaker made a career out of beating these pressure fighters.
That's
most
right.
of the people he faced were bigger, were probably bigger hitters than he was.
Right.
You know, Whitaker's not known as a knockout artist, as we've proved in this show here. I think Whitaker is able to shut down Duran's offense and frustrate him throughout the fight.
All right.
I think, and I think he does a good enough job of this, whether he gets caught or not. I don't think he gets knocked out.
In your opinion, it goes to the scorecards, and then who
goes
wins?
To the scorecards. My pick is Pernell Whitaker by a very close decision.
Okay, what does the computer say?
So now we've got a split decision, and hey, who would have it any other way for our lightweight final here?
Right, right.
All right. The computer with 70%. 70% takes for the winner, the new fantasy lightweight champion, the best ever lightweight ever, Manos de Piedras, Roberto Duran wins the lightweight title.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hey,
70%. The computer had a 70%. I think we matched him about 50 times.
Yeah. All right. Well, he was nice. We made him number one for a reason, and he basically proved why he's a number one.
Yeah. Like I said, man, I think Pernell Whitaker gets him. You think Duran gets him. Hey, the third guy, the computer, takes it. So, hey,
There you go.
Leave it in the judge's hands, That's what happens.
Well, I hope everybody enjoys it. By the way, have we gotten good feedback? Do you get emails?
We've gotten a lot of good feedback. A lot of people are interested in this. And that which is really cool. Especially, you talk to people. You talk to people online. You talk to people out and about. And, we've gotten a lot of good feedback, and they were really split on this fight too. They were split on the Mosley fight. They were split on the Mosley fight, and a lot of people were split on the Duran Arguello fight as well. So it was pretty good.
Well, you know what? Hey guys, if you want us to do another one, pick the division and give us your feedback.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I mean, we would talk about the divisions and stuff like that. I mean, because I thought this was pretty good. I thought this was pretty fun. I mean, because, you think about there's only so many fantasy fights you can do in the sense that, I mean, there's always lots of them. I mean, you can take Bradley and Khan or something like that or, like newer fighters and stuff like that. But I thought this was really cool that, we were able to do it like this. And then, you talk about,
Sometimes when I, with the Ringside Robbie's Boxing Corner that I now have where Eric puts up all the history lessons, when I hear some of these back, I actually hear about future fights that they supposedly talk about that never happened, and I've actually gotten good ideas by going back and listening to some of these. It's like, wow, why didn't that fight ever take place,
Right, And we were talking about that too, about I think you and I had talked about it at one point with Arguello and Duran.
Yeah.
Why didn't that fight happen, man? That would have been a really good fight,
Yeah.
That fight probably should have went down,
Absolutely. Oh, that would have been that would have been all out war.
Yeah, and so we're thinking about the next one, man. I was thinking about either heavyweights or welterweights or.
That's why I said let's put it out there to the people. Let them vote on what they want next.
Yeah, that's a good idea, man. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
So.
So either hit Eric up on Twitter or hit him up through email, or you can leave messages with me at the Ringside Robbie's Boxing Corner.
That's
right. And let us know what you want.
Right, at Ringside73 is my Twitter account, so go ahead and hit me up there.
And then you can hit me up at 773-572-7781 and let us know what you want, and we'll put the votes together and whatever comes out the winner, we'll put this together. We'll give you a few weeks to think about it, and we'll go from there.
Right. So Roberto Duran, now the new lightweight champion.
There you go. Yeah. All right.
All right. So boxing's over with, and so now it's time to go ahead and talk about Super Bowl. Let's do a Super Bowl recap here. And talk about the game yesterday, man. What a game that was, man. And we're going to bring Lisa in because she's kind of been here with the playoffs and everything like that. So,
I'm plugged the headphones.
That was my son in the background, if you didn't hear him. So she's been here, like I said, man, through the playoffs and everything. And admittedly, she doesn't know much about football.
But
we'll bring her in. We'll bring her in for this segment, you know.
Okay.
So, as I predicted last week, I had my 5-star lock of the year, Denver, and I even called it by 14. Denver by 14. What was the score yesterday? 24-10, Denver. I do it again. I amaze myself. A lot of people made a lot of money off me last week, and that's okay. I made a lot of money off the game last night. All right. But let's talk about that.
You didn't even win the stupid pool we were in.
Well, no, it was fixed.
I was in a pool too, and I didn't win it either. So don't do that.
So let's talk about that, man. Denver's defense was just amazing yesterday, and I mean, I overlooked it, but why did we overlook it? Given that New England game. And the fact that, you know, usually, typically, when I saw Carolina play against, in that NFC championship, and they put a lot of points on the board, and typically, teams that put a lot of points on the board, you know, in the NFC championship or AFC championship, the championship games, go into the Super Bowl a little bit flat. And the one game I point to was that Buffalo Bills game, when they played the New York Giants in the Super Bowl. They had routed, I guess, Oakland at the time. Like 60.
Thank you very much for bringing back a bad memory. Okay.
They hang like 50 or 60 points on them or something crazy?
Yeah,
I mean, ridiculous.
51-3. Thank you very much.
It was crazy.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, a lot of the MVPs in the suit that they recognized last night were pretty hard for us to swallow too.
I know.
Hate Joe Montana.
It was awful. But you know, Denver had a wonderful game plan. Because, you know, Cam Newton, Carolina basically dominated the NFC because Newton was able to run around and do what he wanted all year long. And Denver had 2 weeks to actually put together a game plan to actually stop him from running. They sacked him 7 times yesterday.
That was amazing, man. I mean, you know, and he's known for, you know, being a big guy, he's hard to take down and everything like that. I mean, they, you know, and when he wasn't sacked, he was under all kinds of pressure. And when he was able to run, he was only able to run east-west. They shut down north and south for him big time.
They basically took his game completely away from him yesterday. I mean, there was times where he was laying on the ground throwing a temper tantrum like a 5-year-old would do.
Did you see the one toward the end of the game in the end zone when he got hit in the end zone?
Yeah.
And he's over there crying like a baby.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Where does the blame ultimately lie on the Carolina Panthers? Was it their inability to make the adjustments?
It was not only their inability to make the adjustments, but none of these players that were on this team had any previous Super Bowl experience. The Super Bowl is like no other football game on the planet. You know, you can't treat it like a regular game. It's like a fighter going into his first title fight. If you've never been on that stage before, you find out what you're made of, and Carolina has a lot of soul searching to do.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm not sure this game was as much about Carolina as it was about Denver. I think that we overlooked that defense because they played a heck of a game against New England, but a lot of people wrote that off. Well, New England's line was very suspect. New England was banged up. I feel like the whole year we've been looking at Denver and saying, like, giving a reason why they were so good or why they won instead of them being so good. I think that Denver
didn't look impressive all year. I mean, they had to switch quarterbacks in the middle of the year because Manning got hurt.
But how many teams would be able to do what they did with their backup in for, what, 4 or 5 games?
Actually, he was in for 7. They went 5-2 with him. Yeah.
I mean, I just think, like I said, I don't know, because they didn't have these crazy dominant wins, and it seemed like every time they played a good team, you could say, well, this was wrong for the good team, or this was wrong. I just don't think they got nearly enough credit.
Well, yeah. Let's be honest here, too. I mean, you talk about Oswalt coming in for 7 games. You know, Manning, the only time I thought he looked good was the last game of the season when they put him back in. He took over for Oswalt, and he came back in, and he kind of let him in there.
Yeah, they put him back in the second half, Eric.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, that was the only time he really looked good. I mean, even in the playoffs, he looked lackluster. I mean, but he knew his role in the whole scheme of things. His role is not to win the game. His role is to not make mistakes.
Well, that's why Peyton Manning will probably retire and Brock Osweiler will be the new Denver starting quarterback next year.
And that's what I had to think about, too. When we say they played 7 games with a backup quarterback. Yeah, technically he's a backup, but he's also the quarterback they drafted to be Peyton Manning's replacement.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as having some nobody come off the bench.
Right. And so he'll start doing that next year. And I would suspect, even though Peyton didn't announce it yesterday, I would suspect in the near future we're going to hear about him retiring.
I think that non-announcement is one more reason that Peyton Manning might be the classiest player I've ever watched play. I think he knew if he announced that entire post game would turn into about him, and he is enough of a team player and has been from the very beginning of his career that he wasn't willing to do that. And as much as I've not always been his biggest fan, you cannot deny the man is a class act.
No, he is a class. Well, that's, you know, his whole family is a class act because,
absolutely,
you know, the whole family's raised around football. I mean, their dad played, him and Eli played, now they both have won 2 Super Bowls. So, you know, I think Peyton's going to go off in the sunset, and Denver will defend their title next year with a new quarterback. So,
how can you not, though? I mean, the last person to do that, how ironic is it the last person to do that was John Elway?
Yeah.
You know, Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, and he lost, what is it, he lost like 4 Super Bowls? I think, wasn't he in 6?
He lost 3 Super Bowls, and then he won
the
2.
Then he won 2, okay, yeah, so he was in 5. You know, so he wins his last 2. And, I mean, look at Peyton Manning, who was just in the Super Bowl not too long ago, you know, and got beat by Seattle, and then, you know, he was beat by New Orleans prior to that. And then he comes back in this one and, you know, against this team who's 15-1 at the time. What are they, 17-1?
17-1, yeah. Now they're 17-2, yeah.
And that's all they could talk about. I mean, that's all they could really talk about is Cam Newton and that offense and Cam Newton.
It's because Carolina was able to dominate their competition throughout the entire season. Up until yesterday, they had never really played a tough game.
The only tough game I can remember is them with New Orleans. And that was like a back-and-forth game. And I talked to Lisa about this yesterday before the game, and I said, you know, my question is, what are they going to do? You know, have they played, you know, and their schedule isn't their fault, but have they played enough quality teams?
No.
And been in enough dogfights?
No. Nope.
What happens if things don't go their way early? You know.
Well, and we found out.
Yeah. And what about, I mean, what do you think happened with Cam Newton yesterday? Was it just a question of Denver's defense? Was it just a question, did he actually melt down? I mean, what happened?
I think it was a combination of all those things, Eric. I don't think he was prepared for the biggest stage of his life.
I think he's extremely young. I think he's very much relished that he has been able to be himself and find success. Unfortunately, his head is about as big as the states of Carolina.
Yep.
I really, really hope that this is a very humbling experience for him, because I think he has the potential to be a really special player.
But yeah, he's
only
20. Remember, this is the widest gap in age in Super Bowl history for quarterbacks.
There was Peyton interesting being, history in that game last night.
Yeah, Peyton being 39, Cam being 26.
And Peyton's the first and only, so far, quarterback to win a Super Bowl with two different teams, which I found to be shocking.
That is correct.
Yeah. I was surprised with that, too. You know, what do you make of did you see the press conference with Cam Newton afterwards?
No, but I heard that he walked out on people.
He absolutely did. He came in. He had a hood on. He was just sulking in his chair. He looked like a giant baby, to be honest with you. You know, and he's sitting there. He's sulking in his chair. He's giving everybody one-word answers, and then he just gets up and walks out.
That sort of reminds me of Marshawn Lynch a couple of years ago at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm only here because I don't want to get fined.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, and a lot of people after that, you know, they're questioning his leadership and everything like that. A lot of the Bronco players were calling him selfish and everything like that after the game. What did you think? Did you see the fumble? Played this over and over, and where it appeared to be like he got out of the way.
Yeah, he did. He did not want to dive in there and go after the ball. I mean,
that really
said a lot about his character as a football player, because all other quarterbacks are taught, if you can go get it, you go in there and you get it.
Right.
You know what, though? I have a slightly different idea about that. First of all, I think in this day and age, we can slow things down so much and look at a billion different angles. I think sometimes we lose the feel of it, what it is in real time. And I'm not sure in that split second he really made a decision to go away from the ball. But let's just say he did for a second. I heard quite a bit of national talk after Andy Dalton went down for my Bengals about how, in a way, it was selfish of him to try to make that tackle that he broke his thumb on. And if you think about it, you know, it might be true. He made that tackle and saved, you know, a run. It could have been a pick six for the way he threw that interception.
Yeah.
But the rest of our season ended. So if he chooses not to make that tackle, even if they lose that game, he's in there for the rest of that. So I don't know how I really feel about that.
I think in Andy's case, he just did it on instinct, Lisa,
sure.
You know.
I don't fault him for it. I don't know. I guess I can kind of see. Like I said, I heard quite a bit of national media talking about how stupid, and I've even heard the word selfish of him to make that tackle.
I disagreed with everybody when I heard that.
He was
doing his job, you know.
You know, and just to play devil's advocate here too, Peyton Manning threw a pick. I think it was before the half, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
He threw a pick, and my dad and I looked at each other and said, he threw it right to that guy. I mean, it was almost like he was bought off. I mean, he threw it right in that guy's chest. And I said, oh, my God, you know. And that guy took off, and, you know, they got him or whatever. But I'm like, that was a horrible throw. And I looked at the different angles. It wasn't a horrible throw. He looked, and the guy really had to reach for it. It was a great interception. I mean,
yeah.
It really was a really good interception. He didn't throw it to him. The angle that we were watching made it look like, wow, what was that guy, what was the quarterback thinking at that point? But
right.
Then you look at the different angles, you're like, I see that. Now I see it.
Yeah.
So who knows? I saw one angle of that fumble where he looked, and as soon as the Denver guy put his hand on it, he appeared to back away. I don't know what he's seeing. I don't know what, you know, I don't know. So I can't really say that he's selfish or he didn't want to get hurt. He didn't have the heart to jump in there. I don't know.
I don't know, but I can guarantee you, I haven't heard any talk shows today, but I guarantee you, if I turn on any sports talk shows tonight, they're all going to be all over him because it really looked bad.
Yeah. I will say, though, too, about his post-game press conference, it looked bad. I mean, he looked like a sulking child. But that's the worst moment in his professional career. how many of us have to face cameras in the worst moment of our professional careers?
No, only athletes and politicians and people like that,
right.
Entertainers, you know.
But the other thing, too, is that I went back this afternoon and looked at a video of Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl that they lost to the Saints. And he ran off the field without talking to a single New Orleans Saint player. And I don't remember hearing a single word about it.
No.
So, I don't know. Maybe we need to give this guy a little bit of a break and admit, you know, he's kind of young and this was a pretty awful moment, so.
Well, hopefully he's learned from this experience and, you know, and if he ever gets a chance to play in a Super Bowl again, we'll see what he learned from it, you know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go and if this actually breaks them or makes them stronger, you know, because this was a tough pill to swallow. I mean, he came in and he was clearly, beaming with confidence. He came in with gold shoes on with MVP written on the shoes, you know, practicing.
Remember on Saturday he was officially given the Most Valuable Player Award, so yeah.
Right, which tells you that those shoes were made probably quite a bit in advance because they can't really, I don't think they can do those overnight. Who knows? I mean, maybe for Cam Newton they do, I don't know. But
I don't know.
Yeah, gold shoes with MVP on them. I'm like, you know, really? You know, dude, you know? But and to come out there and, I mean, to be the hero all season and then just to be the worst, and I was talking to somebody about this today, man, the worst feeling is not to strike out at the last at bat. It's to have it looking as it goes by, and then they call the strike, you know, or to try to throw that punch that you know you can land, but you just can't throw it. You just can't pull the trigger.
Yep.
And that's what happened yesterday. They went out with a whimper. They didn't go out with a bang. They went out with a whimper, and it was that defense that smothered them, you know. And I don't think it was really any fault of Carolina, but, you know, you kind of question the adjustments being made and everything like that. But I don't know. That defense was so quick. Anything they could have done, I mean, what could they have done, you know? I don't know.
Denver put some serious money behind that defense, and I don't know if they'll get back to the Super Bowl, but, man, with that defense, they've got a good shot next year.
Well, Von Miller, from what they said, was a free agent now, I guess.
Oh, yeah, well, Denver's probably going to put the franchise tag on him. The off-season beginning on March 9th is going to be very, very interesting around the National Football League.
Yeah. So, we'll see what happens there, man. But any other thoughts on the Super Bowl?
No, you good?
That's about does it, huh?
Yeah, no, that'll do it.
All right. Well, that'll do it here for us at Ringside Reporter on our 50th episode. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781. And listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.